And it's Dr. Penny van Oosterzee. And I'm just going to see if she's with us. Welcome to the show, Penny.
Hello, how are you going?
We're very well, but things are, well, in an interesting state up there in Queensland. I mentioned to the listeners just a little earlier that you're adjunct principal research fellow, the College of Marine Environmental Sciences, up there at Charles Darwin University, and you also actually at James Cook, where you're principal research adjunct professor?
Yes, I'm more associated with James Cook these days. I spent a lot of time in the Territory, but the last 8 years or so in Queensland, yeah.
Well, we decided to have you on the show today because it seems that it's had quite an impact on the Queensland election, but there is a lot going up in Queensland that is in your particular area, and it's been estimated that in Queensland alone at the moment, an area the size of the MCG is bulldozed every 3 minutes, killing an estimated 45 million animals each year. And there have been reports in The Guardian, the Sydney Morning Herald, and also in The Conversation, where you have recently co-authored a piece about the fact that Australia is a deforestation hotspot, but what's happening up in Queensland is a frenzy of tree clearing, which, just to give the listeners a little bit of background, but you might be able to shed more light on this, it does seem to have come about as the result of Campbell Newman government a few years ago with the weakening of the environment laws that actually restricted the ability of landowners to randomly clear trees, although a lot of the recent deforestation appears to be illegal. We've just introduced the same laws down here in New South Wales. Should we be worried?
Yes, I think you should be worried. I think New South Wales is a little behind Queensland, but not a lot. So the Australia, eastern Australia, is the deforestation hotspot, not just Queensland. Queensland leads the way, but it's also in New South Wales. But yes, certainly Queensland is the rate of clearing that we had over 2015-2016, the increase on that on the year before is the fastest rate of increase anywhere in the world. So that's a 33% increase of clearing from 2014-15. So that 33%, that's the highest rate of increased clearing anywhere in the world. Not the extent, but certainly the pace. And we're about number 10. In terms of deforestation.
So what you're saying really is that people usually think of places like the Amazon and Borneo and the Congo as the deforestation hotspots, but we're right up there in the top 10.
Yeah, and have been for a while. I mean, it did drop. Now, our history isn't great. I mean, we've got the most to lose, Australia. We're the only developed country that has this amount of clearing, and the only developed country in that top 10. And in terms of forestry, I mean, we're an arid continent, so we actually have the most to lose, but we're clearing it faster than anyone at the moment, which is a little scary. And hopefully with the election on the weekend and the probable return of a Labor government who promised to reinstate the clearing laws, that will turn about now.
We can but hope, but the impacts, of course, are, as you say, it's a dry, hot continent. But let's drill down into what those impacts are, because people think, oh, you know, you can always grow more trees. But on a dry continent such as Australia, where the soil is very old and not so nutrient-rich as places like Europe, we really risk it all blowing away, don't we? And one of the major things that's happening is that the sediment is flowing down into the Great Barrier Reef and causing a lot of problems with water quality for all the aquatic wildlife off the coast of Queensland and New South Wales. Tell us a little bit more about what those impacts are, what the consequences of those sorts of impacts are.
It's your original comment, about we can plant more trees, belies the fact that 80% of our endangered species in Queensland relies on the woodlands that are being cleared. So you're not just clearing trees, you're bringing closer to extinction a suite of animals, and we've got the highest extinction rate in the world for mammals, together with one of the highest rates of clearing. 40% of the amount that was cleared in 2015-16 was in Great Barrier Reef catchments, and that does flow, obviously, to the reef and deposit sediment on the reef, which doesn't help the reef. I mean, most of the reef's current state of turmoil is because of climate change. I mean, because oceans are hot. And therefore the coral is dying. The sediment and nutrients that are pouring into the reef don't help it recover. So I suppose that's the issue. I mean, when you're sick, you really don't need to get sicker, if you know what I mean. You actually need to have that healthy health around you so that you can actually get back again. So it really doesn't help at all, pouring the sediment into the reef.
No, and when you say that 80% of Queensland's threatened species live in forest and woodland, I mean, in New South Wales we've got problems with the imminent extinction of our koala population. We've even got a little healthy population of koalas out in Western Sydney around Campbelltown, and the state government is looking at clearing some of the last habitat available to that koala colony in the next couple of years, very, very soon, to put in new housing estates. What are we actually doing to the totality of our ecologies when we take out the native species and that kind of delicate balance, not just, you know, talking about soil erosion and losing our topsoil, but what happens to that web of fertility that's created by having this relationship, interdependent relationship of all the different flora and fauna in a particular area?
Well, we just lose our heritage. We lose our forests and we lose the species that live in them, and they're simply not replaceable. I mean, in the article that appeared in The Conversation that I was a co-author of, we did, and I was involved in a study that also looked at ecosystem services, this idea of trying to value, in monetary terms, the other areas. Now, the reason we're trying to do that at all is because people don't get it unless you somehow can compare apples with apples. But we did it for Cape York, a very, very preliminary valuation of the ecosystem services of that largely intact landscape, although it looks like it's possibly lost many of its mammals. But because there's no monitoring effort going on, we can't be 100% sure. But we found out that just doing a preliminary estimate that the per hectare value of Cape York is something in between $3,000 and $6,000 per hectare. But cattle on Cape York is $18 per hectare. So of course you can't completely compare that $3,000 to $6,000 in marketing terms. You can't market all of that. But if you actually calculate the sediment, the soil, the wildlife, the wood, the air, and the water that actually trickles down into the Artesian Basin, the value of that is much more than the $18 per hectare that you're getting from cattle. But the other thing to remember that most of the clearing in Queensland, the replacement vegetation was for pasture, was for stock, and the cattle industry is in decline in terms of trade of 2%. Per year. So there's actually no sense at all in clearing. But in some, you know, the landholder will say, well, we have to clear to get the short-term gain. And that is right. There is a short-term gain, but the long-term cost is worn by the community for weeds, feral animals, for pollution. And that currently is not incorporated in policy anywhere, and it needs to be.
It certainly does. I mean, when you've got a degraded landscape, it's simply not as fertile and it's not purifying some of the elements. Like, people forget that vegetation is quite involved in the purification of water, for instance, and so are many of the species that live in that vegetation. So if you want pure air and water and a fertile landscape, you really need to keep the ecology alive. You don't kind of club it to death and drag it out and burn it. But Yeah. It's interesting your your decision to do the costings, and I know that it's been a growing trend in the environment movement to try and get governments to actually look at what our natural assets are worth. You've also done some analysis of how the rate of tree clearing is actually neutralising or putting into reverse in some cases a lot of the money that the government is spending to actually plant trees.
It's reversing or nullifying all of the money, not a lot of it. So, I mean, when you look at it, it depends on how, and so there's all sorts of different ways of looking at it, which is what we tried to do. And in the end came to the conclusion there was really no point in continued clearing for short-term gain for some, for a few individuals, as it turns out. For instance, the 20 million trees campaign was wiped out with 1 year's worth of clearing in Queensland. All our environment programs, all our environment restoration programs since 2013, we've only been able to recover or restore 1/10 of that of what was cleared last year. And if you're looking at our climate plank of the Emission Reductions Fund, by the end of next year, that 189 million tonnes of carbon dioxide will have gone up in smoke in clearing. So whichever way you look at it, it is a bit of a nonsense.
The economic costs are looking like not just millions of dollars, but billions of dollars being just thrown away.
There's an even more insidious problem, and that is that all governments of all states and the Australian government itself is cutting funding for finding out what is actually going on in the landscape. So, for instance, our long-term monitoring sites, funding has been cut from that. So there is no monitoring going on in Cape York and over much of northern Australia of the landscape condition, let alone what species are there. That is being cut again and again, and that doesn't capture a lot of news. But so we are, in many respects, we're doing a lot of this stuff with remote sensing because that's all that's left. For whatever reason, not only are we throwing away the money for the small environmental programs that exist, but we don't even know what we're losing in the landscape because the resources aren't there to find out what's there now.
Seems like a concerted campaign to make sure that people don't find out. I know that there have been environment organisations which are actually under threat from having their charity status taken off them by the government, the federal government at the moment. But the Wilderness Society, for instance, has been keeping as much of an eye on. I think they published some footage of a big burn up in Queensland just the other day. I saw it. I think it was in The Guardian. So some of those environment organisations are trying to step in with drone footage, but it's not the same as having a situation closely monitored by scientists who know how to collect the data and how to interpret it, is it?
No. It's battle lines on all fronts. Unfortunately, the environment departments of university has been slashed and cut in favour of other types of courses. So the scientists are losing their jobs at CSIRO and elsewhere. It simply isn't a great situation. And then when you actually lift the cover and have a little peek, which is what the SLATS report that uncovered this clearing, which comes out every year, and it's a government report and they're transparent in the sense that you can find it, then it's pretty shocking.
It's interesting. I mean, what's going on here? On the one hand, you could say, well, humans are stupid and we keep doing stupid things. We've got all these research facilities. We've got some of the world's top scientists. We've got the capacity to collect and analyse the data. We know what we should be doing. It's been calculated what we're losing. Is this all because of agribusiness, or what is the driver behind this when it doesn't actually, it's a bit like the coal industry, it doesn't long-term stack up financially, and yet it seems that our state and federal governments are pursuing a course which does not make sense?
No, that's right. I mean, what is it? I mean, it's you and I and consumerism. I mean, this is not a conversation about that. It's more about clearing. But yes, the policies are increasingly stacked up against the environment at all levels and everywhere. So I think that we really need to take a good look at that. And the other thing, though, to be mindful of is that people on the land who some of the people on the land who are doing the clearing aren't necessarily bad people. They are struggling because of the declining terms of trade of the cattle industry and this very traditional industry. But there are no policies in place to pay them for looking after the land. So in some respects, you can, I wouldn't say forgive, but you can almost understand why they are doing it, because what else are they to do? So, I mean, we do need to have a little bit more of a holistic approach to this issue.
Mm, definitely. It sounds like we're going to be in big trouble if we keep going. And let's hope that the change in the Queensland government or that the election does bring those policies in, which they've been a little slow to enforce, but they've promised now. But, you know, in New South Wales, in August, they introduced these new weakened vegetation laws, which mean that we're going to see something very similar happening. So the deforestation rates here are going to escalate as well. And I don't know, how do you kind of keep going, Penny?
Well, I mean, you just keep going in every way you can. But, I mean, I think you do need to lobby your politicians and you need to provide alternatives. I mean, we are looking, you know, at a carbon economy. I mean, if we are going to actually try and meet our Paris goals, then we have to actually stop this clearing, because the only way we're going to actually meet our 2020 goals is actually, and that's quite ironic, is because Australia counts its land clearing reduction in the 1990s. We're the only developed country that were allowed to do that, and there's a little bit of sneakiness going on in the Australian government at the time, but we were allowed to count our land clearing reductions at that time, and we're still carrying them over to meet our 2020 target. So there's a whole lot of irony in what's going on in terms of our climate commitment as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Penny van Oosterzee, and it's really very comforting to know that at least there are scientists such as yourself who are monitoring the situation. It's alarming when we have a government that does in some cases employ experts but then doesn't want to listen to them, and it is also alarming to find that the cutbacks are directly impinging on the work that you do. But thanks for joining us this afternoon on Monday Drive.
Thank you.